Chapter 4. Mr. Rochester. One afternoon in January, I returned to Thornfield Hall in the early evening after running some errands in the town nearby. When I entered the hall, I heard voices in the dining room. The door was closed, so I dared not enter and disturb whoever was in there. I made my way to Mrs. Fairfax's room, where there was a fire burning, but no Mrs. Fairfax. However, sitting on the floor was a great black and white long-haired dog. I rang the bell to find out where the dog had come from. Leah soon entered the room. "Whose dog is this?" I asked her. "It's Mr. Rochester's, miss. He's just arrived." "Is Mrs. Fairfax with him?" "Yes, and Miss Adele. They are in the dining room now." Mr. Rochester went to bed early that night, so I had no chance to meet him. When he came downstairs in the morning, it was to attend to his business. No longer was Thornfield Hall as silent as a church, but it echoed every hour or two to a knock on the door, a ring of the bell, steps, and new voices. In the afternoon, Mrs. Fairfax came into the schoolroom. "Mr. Rochester would be glad if you and Adele would have tea with him in the drawing room this evening. He has been so busy all day that he could not ask to see you before," she said. That evening, at around 7 o'clock, I followed Mrs. Fairfax into the dining room. Adele was already in the room, sitting on the floor beside the master's dog, Pilot. Mr. Rochester must have been aware of our entrance, but it appeared he was not in the mood to notice us, for he never lifted his head as we approached. "Here is Miss Eyre, sir," said Mrs. Fairfax. He bowed, still not taking his eyes from his dog and the child. "Let Miss Eyre be seated," he said. I sat down and felt interested to see how he would go on. Mr. Rochester went on as a statue would. He never spoke nor moved. Mrs. Fairfax seemed to think it necessary that someone should speak, so she began to talk. She asked him a few questions about his day, but all he responded with was, "Madam, I should like some tea." During our tea, Mr. Rochester asked me a few questions, but he was abrupt and rather cold. When the tea tray was taken away, Mrs. Fairfax settled into a corner with her knitting, and Adele was ordered by Mr. Rochester to amuse herself with Pilot. "Come to the fire," he then said to me. "You have been a resident in my house for 3 months?"
"Yes, sir."
"Who are your parents?"
"I have none."
"Well, you must have relatives then. Uncles and aunts, brothers and sisters?"
"No, none that I ever saw," I replied.
"Who recommended you to come here?"
"I advertised for a position in the paper, and Mrs. Fairfax answered it." We then spoke a little of Lowood School, since Mr. Rochester knew of it.
"You went to Lowood when you were 10 and stayed 8 years. You are now, then, 18?" he continued. I nodded. "And what did you learn at Lowood? Can you play piano?"
"Yes, sir, a little."
"And you can draw, too. Adele showed me some of your drawings this morning. Fetch me your portfolio, and I'll determine whether its contents are original. Surely you had a master artist help you draw your pictures."
"No, indeed. They are all my own drawings."
After I had laid out my drawings on the table in front of him, he scrutinized each sketch and painting. He asked me various questions about them, and finally demanded that I put them away. I was then told to put Adele to bed as it was 9 o'clock. "I wish you all good night now," he said, making a movement with his hand toward the door and clearly dismissing us. After I had put Adele to bed, I went to see Mrs. Fairfax again. "Mr. Rochester is very moody and abrupt, I see," I said to her. "True, and no doubt he would appear so to a stranger, but I am used to his manner and never think of it," replied Mrs. Fairfax. For several days after my first meeting with Mr. Rochester, I hardly saw him. When I would pass him in the hallway or on the stairs, he would acknowledge my presence with a distant nod or a cool glance. Sometimes he would bow and smile. His changes in mood did not upset me because I knew I had nothing to do with them. One day, after Mr. Rochester's dinner guests had left,
he sent a message that Adele and I were to join him downstairs. Adele found a present waiting for her when we arrived and quickly went off to a corner of the room to open it and explore its contents. Mr. Rochester looked different from what I had seen him look before. He looked much less gloomy, and there was even a smile on his lips. Perhaps he was feeling the effects of the wine he had drunk at dinner. He was more cheerful and pleasant than ever before. We spoke for some time. I found him unique, and he was an interesting man. He wasn't particularly handsome, but he also wasn't unattractive. He had thick black hair and great dark eyes. He wasn't very tall, but had a broad chest and a strong figure. In truth, I quite liked looking at him. In the following weeks after this visit with Mr. Rochester, he was more welcoming toward me. He always had a word or a smile for me when I passed him in the house or on the lawn. He also requested to see me more often in the evenings after dinner, and I believed he enjoyed my company as much as I enjoyed his. The ease of his manner made me feel at home in Thornfield Hall, and I became happy with this new interest added to life. Mr. Rochester's presence in the room soon became more cheerful than the brightest fire. However, I didn't forget his faults, which he frequently showed me. He was proud, harsh, and moody, but I thought there were also excellent qualities in him. The good in him soon made me forget the bad. I lay awake one night thinking about Mr. Rochester. I was wondering whether he would leave Thornfield Hall again soon. Mrs. Fairfax said he rarely stayed for more than a fortnight, and he had already been a resident for 8 weeks. If he does go soon, the change will be sad, I thought. I must have fallen asleep, but suddenly I woke up to a strange murmur. I rose and sat up in bed, listening. I tried to go back to sleep, but my heart beat anxiously. I heard movement outside my bedroom door, but when I asked who was there, no one answered me. I remembered Pilot, and the thought of him outside my door calmed me down a bit. I had finally settled back down to sleep when an evil laugh was uttered. Something then murmured and moaned. It sounded like it was coming from outside my bedroom door. In a few moments, I heard steps going up the hallway toward the third floor staircase. Was that Grace Poole? Is she possessed by the devil? I thought. I decided to go see Mrs. Fairfax as I could no longer be alone. I unlocked my door and stepped out of my room. There was a candle burning just outside my door, which was very odd. Stranger still was that the air seemed quite cloudy, as if filled with smoke. In another second, I became aware of a strong smell of burning. The door to Mr. Rochester's bedroom was slightly open, and the smoke was coming from inside his room. In an instant, I was in his room. Flames leapt up near his bed, and the curtains were on fire. In the middle of the blaze and smoke, Mr. Rochester lay in his bed in a deep sleep. "Wake up! Wake up!" I cried. I shook him, but he would not wake. The smoke had knocked him out. Not a moment could be lost, so I rushed over to his basin and jug of water. Fortunately, both were filled with water. I picked them up and dumped the water on Mr. Rochester and the bed. I then ran back to my own room, grabbed my water jug, and used it to soak the curtains. In this way, I succeeded in both putting out the flames and waking Mr. Rochester. "Get up, sir!" I cried. "What is going on?" he asked anxiously. I quickly told him what had just happened. He listened very closely, and his face showed more concern than surprise. "Remain here until I return," he said. "I must pay a visit to the third floor. Don't move or call anyone." A very long time passed, and I grew tired. Finally, I heard footsteps in the hallway. Mr. Rochester entered his room again, looking pale and gloomy. "I have found it all out," he said. "As you might have guessed, it was Grace Poole who has caused this trouble. I will think about what to do. In the meantime, say nothing about this event to anyone. I will account for what has happened tonight. Now, return to your own room, and I'll sleep on the couch in the library." "Good night, then, sir," I said, leaving his room. He held out his hand, and I gave him mine. He took both my hands in his and said, "You have saved my life. I owe you a great debt." I am glad I happened to be awake, sir, I said. He soon let my hand go, and I returned to my bedroom. Too agitated to rest, I rose as soon as the day dawned. The next morning, Mrs. Fairfax told me Mr. Rochester had been reading in his bed when he fell asleep with the candle lit. The curtains caught fire, but fortunately he woke before the bed burned. She then explained how he managed to put out the fire. A strange event indeed, I said to her in a low voice.